Hello and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look back at the story that dominated the news this year and will continue to do so next year, the secret ties under investigation between Putin and Team Trump and his family. We'll begin with a broadcast of Background Briefing from March the 26th of 2017 and go to London to speak with Bill Browder, an American businessman who was the largest investor in Russia until he fell afoul of Putin and was refused entry into Russia. His lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, was murdered by Russian government officials in league with organized crime, and we will discuss the assassination in Kiev of a member of Russia's Duma who was close to the Putin inner circle and was about to testify against Yanukovych, the ousted kleptocratic former Ukrainian president who had Trump's former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, on his payroll. We will also examine the attempted murder of the lawyer representing Magnitsky's widow, who was about to testify about the laundering of stolen money through Cyprus banks. Then we'll go to the July 11th, 2017 broadcast with a release of an incriminating email chain between Donald Trump Jr. and a British tabloid journalist representing a Russian pop singer whose father is a billionaire developer close to Putin. The emails are about setting up a June 2016 meeting in Trump Tower with a Russian lawyer based on the promise that this lawyer worked for the Russian government and had top secret information from the Russian Crown prosecutor that was damaging to Hillary Clinton and, quote, is part of Russia and its government's support for Mr. Trump. Asha Rangappa, Associate Dean at Yale Law School and a former FBI special agent specializing in counterintelligence investigations in New York City, joined us to discuss the extent to which the participants in this meeting acted with corrupt intent to violate campaign laws, and if they were innocent, why did they not call the FBI immediately to report an effort on the part of Russia's intelligence services to compromise them? Then finally, we'll go to a broadcast of Background Briefing on November the 26th of this year, following the recent news that Michael Flynn is presumably cooperating with Robert Mueller. We began with a roadmap of the Mueller investigation, explored the follow the money strand, the political operative strand, and the digital Kushner-Bannon-Mercer strand that will likely coalesce into a conclusion by the special counsel to recommend the impeachment of President Trump if Trump does not fire Mueller first to try to shut down the inquiry. Stephen Harper, a professor at Northwestern University who blogs at The Belly of the Beast and has an article with Bill Moyers at billmoyers.com, The Trump-Russia Story is Coming Together, Here's How to Make Sense of It, joined us. Having produced timelines and a map with over 700 entries of the entangled ties between Putin and Trump and the murky world of Russian oligarchs, state officials, hackers, spies, and Republican operatives, Stephen Harper will discuss how everything that Trump, his cabinet, his campaign, and his complicit GOP Congress has said about connections and collusion between Trump and Russia is a lie. And joining us now from London is Bill Browder, who's a chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital Markets. He was the largest foreign investor in Russia until he was suddenly denied entry to the country and declared a threat to national security by the Russian government for exposing corruption. Since 2009, when his lawyer Sergei Magnitsky died in a Russian prison after uncovering a $230 million fraud committed by Russian government officials, Bill has been leading a global campaign to expose the corruption and human rights abuses endemic in Russia. As a result of this campaign, the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act was signed into U.S. law in 2012, imposing visa bans and asset freezes on certain officials involved in Magnitsky's death. Welcome to Background Briefing, Bill Browder.
Good to be here.
And irony upon ironies, scandal and upon scandal, now, of course, the lawyer for Magnitsky's estate and family was, I think, pretty clearly thrown from the four-story window, the cover story that comes from Russian official news channels, along with Life News, which is a Russian outlet connected to the Russian security service, who were literally there on the scene when the lawyer Goronkov plummeted from the fourth floor building in Moscow. He's on in intensive care. Apparently, he may well survive, although he's got severe head trauma. So I guess this is just relentlessly in your face, as is the assassination of a Russian parliamentarian in Kiev. But How does Putin appear to get away with getting the best of both worlds? He makes it clear to the world and to his enemies that I can get you and murder you in sophisticated and sometimes graphic ways, no matter where you are in the world, but at the same time, I don't have my fingerprints on it.
Well, I'm not sure if he's getting away with anything. I mean, if you look at his behavior over the last few years and the world's response to it, he's definitely not getting away with stuff. I mean, starting with the Magnitsky murder, that led to the imposition of the first sanctions against Russia in the last 35 years with the Magnitsky Act in America. And I can tell you that the more his behavior gets bad, the more countries are adopting the Magnitsky Act. We've just gotten the British Parliament to pass the Magnitsky Act here in London. The Estonian Parliament passed their version of the Magnitsky Act. The Canadians are imminently going to do so. And so on one hand, people are now all over the world starting to create consequences for him. And then on top of that, the Magnitsky Act was then used as a template to go after Russian officials when they shot down MH17, the Malaysian airliner flying over Ukraine that was shot down by Russian rockets. And they imposed Magnitsky-like sanctions on the officials from Russia who were involved in that. And then they even expanded the sanctions to forbid Western banks and financiers from lending to the important Russian companies. So I would really say that Putin's not getting away with a whole lot at all. And I think that in a certain way, everything he's doing right now is trying to create some type of pressure to get rid of all these consequences, because this is really driving him crazy and hitting him where it counts.
Well, just to, for the benefit of the audience, in 2009, Magnitsky, a Russian tax attorney, was beaten to death by 8 prison guards. And that was according to a report published by then Russian President Medvedev by his own Human Rights Commission. And then the Kremlin claimed he died of a coronary. And they put him on trial posthumously for tax evasion. And this case prompted U.S. anti-corruption and human rights legislation, which you pushed, Bill Browder, the Magnitsky Law. And it turns out that Magnitsky was actually killed by a kind of state mafia organization for unearthing this $230 million tax fraud perpetrated against the Russian people. And it appears to be run by an ex-convict named Dmitry Kliyev. And his Kliyev group, of course, in 2012, Alexander Perepinichvi, a former member of the Kliyev group, dropped dead while jogging in Surrey, England. He was only 44 years old. Eventually, they found out that he died. He was poisoned by gelsenium, which is a herb that's only found in China. He was cooperating with Swiss government authorities to locate the missing $230 million, which apparently ended up in Manhattan real estate and American banks and was laundered through a Cyprus company called Brevesson. And the just-fired U.S. attorney in New York, Preet Bharara, was looking into that case when the Trump administration fired him. So is that a summary?
Well, I mean, you've touched on a whole bunch of the shocking events and probably half of the ones that you didn't touch on. I mean, I can add to your summary that after they killed Magnitsky, one of my biggest allies and collaborators in my fight for justice and my call for sanctions was a famous Russian opposition politician named Boris Nemtsov. He was one of the critical voices in getting the law passed, and as many of your listeners will know, he was murdered on the bridge in front of the Kremlin in February of 2015. His protege, his number two, who also has traveled with me all over the world to different parliaments calling for Magnitsky sanctions, was a young man named Vladimir Karamurza. Vladimir is 33 years old, one of the most articulate Russians I've ever met, and hugely charismatic, a real future potential leader of Russia. And he was poisoned in Moscow, went into coma, had multiple organ failures. The doctors said he had a 5% chance of living, and he miraculously survived after being in a coma for about a month. He eventually was well enough to go back onto the trail of campaigning for Magnitsky sanctions, and then they tried again to kill him with poison, same poison, just like a month ago, and again he survived. But, I mean, these guys, And then, of course, which you mentioned at the beginning of your program, but let me re-stress it, is Nikolai Gorokhov. Nikolai Gorokhov is the lawyer for Sergei Magnitsky's family. Sergei Gorokhov had put together an explosive dossier that he was presenting to court showing the collusion between the Kluyev organized crime group and the members of the senior members of Russian law enforcement to cover up the liability of those people in the Magnitsky case. And he had the documents because some of these emails leaked from members of the Kluyev group. He was going to present them in court, and then the day before he was going to present them in court, he falls down 4 stories from his apartment building in Moscow. And again, as you mentioned, and I have to stress this, the first report on the scene, the first reporter on the scene, almost, you know, very shortly afterwards, was Life.ru, which is a an organization, a news organization, which everybody knows is connected to the Kremlin, connected to the Russian security services. And they were there almost, it appeared to me anyways, as if they kind of were warned in advance about this thing, because they were there so soon. And they then immediately came out and said, nothing suspicious about this fall. It was an accident. And so there is just layer upon layer of evil and badness and terrible stuff going on over there. And everything somehow connects back to this Magnitsky case. And the reason it does is because the Magnitsky case is the case which shows definitively that Putin is a kleptocrat, that he steals money in large amounts from the state, and then he kills people to cover up. And this is why this case is so important, because it just brings to light everything everybody kind of knew about Putin, but just didn't know how to prove it. This proves it.
Now, of course, just this weekend in Russia, there were demonstrations across most of the major cities. None of them were authorized. The police went into and cracked a bunch of heads. And, of course, the opposition leader, Navalny, who had been thrown with green paint all over him, many of the demonstrators painted themselves with green paint in solidarity. The recent report that Navalny put out got something like, I think, 30, 40 million hits on the internet. It was a very conclusive summary of how much Medvedev, the prime minister who alternates the presidency with Putin and is shorter than Putin, he apparently has been spending so much money on himself that he even built a house for a duck, a pet duck, which led the demonstrators to hold up yellow rubber duckies. So that's a long-winded way to say, Bill, that at least the Russian people, you know, not all of them have bought into the Putin kleptocracy. I recall during the Soviet Union that everybody hated the government. They called it, referred to them as the mafia, because they're a bunch of fat cats living off the fat of the land. And isn't this exactly what you have now with the Siloviki, with the next incarnation of fat cats, Putin's kleptocrats who are living off the fat of the land while everybody else is struggling?
No, it's actually probably 1,000 times worse now than it was back in the Soviet times. In the Soviet times, those fat cats were maybe 6 times richer than the average guy. Now you've got these guys, Medvedev and Putin and all their cronies, that are literally hundreds of thousands of times richer than the average guy. And they've done so at the expense of the average guy by stealing the resources and assets from the state. And they've done it in the most brazen ways. And you were referring to Alexei Navalny and a video that he put on YouTube. And if you watch this video, it's just the most unbelievable thing. Basically, it shows the Prime Minister of Russia, Dmitry Medvedev, who used to be the President of Russia. It shows him in a situation where basically people have these oligarchs around him and his cronies have set up fake charities, and then those charities are basically get money from oligarchs and Russian state banks. And then those Russian oligarchs and state banks, and then those charities are then used to purchase hugely expensive houses, yachts, vineyards, and all sorts of stuff. And in this video, he just shows it all. And it's just, you can understand why people are on the streets protesting. And I'll tell you something. If you watch these protests today, and they've sprung up all over the country, you know, anyone who says that Putin has got an 88% approval rating, it just doesn't make sense if you look at these protests, because people are angry and it's happened all over the country. And I would point out that this is Putin's absolute worst nightmare. His nightmare is a bunch of viral protests springing up everywhere that just get worse and worse and worse. Because Putin can control things when he goes after specific people. He can target people. He can target me. He can target Sergei Magnitsky. He can target Boris Nemtsov. But he can't target the entire population of his country. And if this stuff, you know, spreads and gets viral, then it's going to be a really serious existential problem for Putin.
Well, but Putin's had some success here in the United States, where a lot of people on the far left watch RT and believe their propaganda. And you've got this peculiar thing where on the right, the Republicans, the ones that wear their little flag pins on their lapels, are making excuses for Putin. And then on the left, the people that normally were suspicious of the CIA are now hoping the CIA finds a way to impeach Trump. So our politics have been turned on their head. But I wanted to focus in on the connections here to U.S. real estate. If you go through the whole Magnitsky story that I tried to summarize earlier, Bill Browder, when you got the Kliev group, who are at the heart of this murder and embezzlement of $230 million of tax money, that collusion there is very hard to figure out and what Putin's relationship to is. But we know from the assassination of one of the members of the group that was going to testify against them, Alexander Perepilichny,
Perepilichny.
Yeah, Perepilichny. He, of course, was poisoned by this rare Chinese herb. He was testifying to the Swiss authorities. The money, apparently, the $230 million ended up in Manhattan real estate, and was laundered through Prevazon, this Cyprus company, and Preet Bharara, who was just fired by Trump, was looking into it. Is there a connection here? Because we know, for example, there's an obvious connection between the murder of Denis Baranenkov, the parliamentarian who was shot dead in Kiev. He was about to testify against Yanukovych. Yanukovych's on his payroll was the campaign manager of Donald Trump's campaign, Paul Manafort. So I know these aren't exact. Go ahead.
We're taking a step a little bit too far here. There is no connection to Trump from the Magnitsky money. However, there is an extremely tight connection to Putin. In other words, why is Putin so angry with this whole case? Is that Putin got some of the money. And we know that because if you remember, there was a big, big leak last year called Panama Papers, which a big law firm in Panama, all their files got leaked. And from those Panama Papers, one of the biggest stories out of Russia from the Panama Papers is that a strange man in St. Petersburg, who is a cellist in an orchestra in St. Petersburg, Russia, was the recipient of $2 billion worth of largesse from Russian state banks and Russian oligarchs. And it turns out that cellist was the godfather of Putin's daughters. He was Putin's childhood friend. And by all accepted measures, he's a trustee for Vladimir Putin. And so this one particular cellist got $2 billion. And what we've been able to find out is that some of the money, not a huge amount, but some of the money from the Magnitsky crime went to this cellist, Putin's trustee. And so that's the big connection. That's the big smoking gun. That's the thing that upsets these guys so much, is that Putin gets the money. And because Putin gets the money and he's a criminal, and he's a criminal who's ready to murder, that's why people are dropping dead all over the place.
Well, just in closing, though, Baranenkov, who was just murdered by a hitman in Kiev, he's about to testify against Yanukovych. He's apparently from Putin's inner circle. He's a friend of Vladislav Surkov, who's the guru that came up with this idea of this sophisticated propaganda and hybrid warfare operation that Putin has perfected. So there's a connection there, surely. And again, what's your sense of whether or not this guy, Putin, can weather all this? Because you don't think that his popularity is at 80%, as the polls indicate.
Well, you know, the truth of the matter is that if you look at a poll in Russia, a lot of guys who get called up by a stranger in Russia aren't going to say to the stranger, "No, I don't support Putin." And so it's complete nonsense to say that these are accurate polls. However, the people who do support Putin support him on the basis of a lie. The lie is a lie that he's perpetrating every day on all the people, because he controls the entire distribution of information in Russia. He controls all major television stations, radio stations, and just about every newspaper. And the lie that he's promoting is that he's a tough guy, a nationalist, fighting for the good of the Russian people. And if people had any idea, which they're starting to have through the work of Alexei Navalny and others, that he's just a crook stealing everything from the state for his own benefit at the expense of the Russian people. If people in Russia understood that properly, his approval ratings would drop to 2% and he'd be overthrown in a heartbeat. And I think that that's the big question is, you know, in a modern day with internet and telephones and information going around that can't be controlled, will the people eventually get, you know, understand what it is that's going on and then react to it appropriately? And, you know, maybe these protests get quashed like they have in the past, or maybe they go viral. I can't say for sure, but what I can say is that Putin is running an extremely brittle regime, and it could fall at any moment, and he's obviously very scared, because if it does fall, he loses his power, he loses his money, and God knows what else.
Well, Bill Browder, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you.
And again, I've been speaking with Bill Browder, who's the chief executive and founder of Hermitage Capital Markets. He was the largest foreign investor in Russia until he was denied entry into the country and declared a threat to national security by the Russian government for exposing corruption. In 2009, his lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, died in Russian prison after uncovering a $230 million fraud committed by Russian government officials and organized criminals. And Bill's been leading a global campaign to expose the corruption and human rights abuses endemic in Russia. And this is a result in the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act that was signed into U.S. law in 2012. And that was a broadcast of Background Briefing from March the 26th. We'll take a brief break and then be back with more of Background Briefing's Russia coverage from 2017 with an interview on July the 11th, just after the emails of the meeting with the Russians in Trump Tower emerged.